Blog Talk Radio.
Television is a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity, all.
Mary had a little lamb, it was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
I never once said, na-da-da.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
Welcome to your week. It's Reese on the radio right here live on Blog Talk Radio. It's April the 23rd, it's 2012, and it is Monday. That's right, it is Monday. What I would like to consider the worst Monday of the, you know, it's the worst day of the week, is what I'm trying to say. Mondays is mournful Monday for me. Mournful, because there's no news. No one will ever kill, shoot, maim, destroy anybody on during the weekend. I don't understand it. It used to be back in the days. I don't know about you, but for me, the best part about radio, especially when I was doing hip-hop radio, the best part was coming in on Monday. When I was at Hot 97, even when I was at Power 104, definitely when I was at Power 104, and definitely at Power 105 in New York. The one thing I loved about coming in on Monday was that the Negroes were shooting and killing each other in mass quantity. I loved it. Well, for some odd reason, things have changed. I think it's the economy. I think the Negroes don't have enough disposable income to go out to the clubs. You know, they don't get drunk and high enough to kill and shoot one another. Although it was extremely different in the 1970s.
Well, gas is a little bit too high for drive-bys.
Yeah, this is also true. Yes, the hoods can't afford the drive-by. This is absolutely true. He said, like, yo, we need to drive down there and go get these fools, son. We need to get down there and go get these fools, son.
Yo, you got gas money?
Nah, son. It's like $5 a gallon, son.
I ain't shoot nobody today.
But anyway, valid point there, JC. Truth be told, I used to love a Monday because that's when, you know, the world went mayhem on the weekend, the party goers and all that stuff. So I'm not seeing a lot of that. It's just not a lot of news happening. So I'm not saying that it's going to be a boring Monday. It's usually just not as, you know, a lot of happenings don't happen, so to speak, on Monday. But I got plenty. Don't worry about it. I want to talk about this particular story because it's not getting the attention that it should get. Now, this happened last week, roughly around tax day. I think it was like April 15th, April 16th. It's a young 17-year-old white girl who was shot in the head. Her name is Summer Moody. Now, I've got plenty of reasons why this did not garner any attention, even though there are some eerie similarities to the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman case. Again, this is her name is Summer Moody. She is a white 17-year-old girl. She is even more, I guess, to her, I guess in her story, she's even more responsible for her situation than most would, but you still have to beg the question whether or not the shooting was warranted. That's right. Summer Mooney, 17-year-old girl, shot in the head in the commission of a crime. Here's the story.
We know that Baldwin County High School student Summer Mooney is in critical condition after that she was shot. But there are plenty of questions about the circumstances leading up to the shooting, which happened around 4 o'clock yesterday morning near Graffin Island. That's in the Tensaw River near Spanish Ford. News 5's Pat Peterson has been talking with investigators and has an update for us from Baldwin County, from the sheriff's office there. Pat, what have you been able to learn this afternoon?
Well, Devin, as you mentioned off the top of the show, a lot of unanswered questions. What exactly happened on Graffin Island yesterday, and what was Summer Mooney's involvement in that fish camp burglary the sheriff's investigators have told us about? We do know that Mooney was with three juveniles from the Baldwin County area when the shooting happened yesterday on the island. Those three kids have been charged with burglary. Chief Deputy Charlie Jones told me there are several shooting scenarios. I did ask him if the three men from Mobile that were at that fish camp fired a warning shot in the air, or if Mooney and the three juveniles she was with were actual deliberate targets. Chief Deputy Jones says those questions have not been answered.
I can't elaborate on that at this point. That's all under investigation, and the investigators working the case are trying to determine who actually fired the shot. If she was with that group, what the extent of her involvement is, I don't know at this time.
And as you just heard the chief deputy tell me, Mooney was with those three juveniles that have been charged. Mooney obviously is still in critical condition right now at the hospital. I did ask Chief Deputy Jones if Mooney survives, if she would be charged. He would not comment on that situation. Chief Deputy Jones also told me that Graffin Island is known for its problems. It's an apparent problem spot in North Baldwin County, particularly during the summer months, the summer boating season. Deputies have had calls out there. One problem, however, as you know, Graffin Island is not accessible by road or highway. So when we have a situation out there like the one that happened yesterday, the Marine Police are responsible for responding to any type of situations out on the island. Much more on this developing investigation coming up tonight at 5 and 6 right here on News 5. Reporting live from Bay Minette, Pat Peterson, News 5.
So according to this story, Summer Mooney, three other young men, juveniles, took a boat, rowed over to this island where people have been stealing fish. As you heard the reporter say, there have been some problems there before. Eerily similar to George Zimmerman. Someone who saw that the place was being broken into fired a shot, caught the 17-year-old girl in the head. Now, the other three boys have been charged with burglary. She sits in critical condition, and from what people are saying, could die. She could die. Now, are people not talking about this white girl? Come on, you know what they say. And the girl's blonde. Blonde, fairly attractive white girl. She's shot in the head. News isn't taking advantage of this story. Everyone says that they don't pay attention to crimes unless it's a pretty white girl. Got the Holloway case. Casey Anthony. Kaylee Anthony. Elizabeth Smart. National attention. Why aren't they paying attention to this 17-year-old girl shot in the head in the commission of a crime? That's why. Because there's no victim here. That's why. There's no victim. How could there possibly be a victim here? She was doing something illegal. And somebody busted in the head. As they should have. Breaking the law, trespassing. On my property. Blah, blah. And people are running around talking about, oh, I've never known her to get into trouble. Well, just because you didn't know her to get into trouble doesn't mean that she doesn't get into trouble. Well, she seems like a pretty good girl. Well, just because she seems like a pretty good girl doesn't mean that she's not a good girl. That if she is a good girl, you have no proof of that. You don't live with her 24 hours a day. And obviously she's not a good girl. She's hanging out with three boys. Taking a boat to a place where she doesn't belong. Planning on breaking in. Planning on breaking in. And she can bust in the head with a bullet. But if people are so worried about gun control, why aren't they screaming bloody murder about this girl being shot? Perhaps because she was committing a crime. Probably because people would look at this and go, ah, I don't know there, buddy. I'm supposed to feel sorry for this girl? What's because she's shot while she's committing a crime? Nah, you're not going to be able to push your narrative on this one. And you're not. But they're trying to do it. This happened in Pensacola, Florida. They're trying. That's right. Yeah. Right in the belly of the beast. The Trayvon Martin case. Florida. That's right. Now, that local news station, that's Fox 10, whatever they are, they're trying to make some sort of story out of this because people, you know, they want to be concerned about a little, you know, young girl shot in the head. Because you know what they're really saying? Why didn't you shoot the boy? In the commission of a crime. Please shoot the boy. You shot a girl. And it pulls at your heartstrings because it's a girl. It's like, oh, it's a girl I shot in the head, man. So, you see the tug of war with your conscience? Should we be allowed to shoot a woman if she's in the commission of a crime? A young girl in the commission of a crime? Should we be allowed to do that? We wouldn't have batted an eye if one of those boys got shot. Wouldn't have cared. But what are they trying to push? I'm stunned. I'm stunned that no one jumped on this. Come on, did she deserve to be shot? That's all I'm asking. Did she deserve to be shot? I just want to know. See, people have a hard time gripping with the truth. Trespassers will be shot. You see that all the time, right? We've seen that for years. Trespassers will be shot. So what if the trespasser's a girl? Remember John Lovitz, the comedian from Saturday Night Live, who was talking about those three girls who went to one of his friends' homes and put a syrup swastika on her door and put feces in a bag and left it on the front steps? Imagine he had stepped out, blah, shot one of those girls. Trespassers will be shot. What would they have said? Did you have to shoot them? Trespassing on my property. To commit a crime. Did they or did they not? What should I have done? Just allow them to deface my property and I just call police? I'm sorry, folks. The truth of the matter is that when something like this happens, you're just going to have to deal with the facts here when something happens. Get off my lawn! That's simple. What are you doing on my block? And don't come back. JC, why do you think no one's making a big deal out of this case?
Well, simply, she was committing a crime.
That's why.
Yeah.
But doesn't it kind of pull at the heartstrings? 17-year-old blonde girl?
No.
It shouldn't, right?
No.
Then why is the news reporting it?
Because it pretty much goes against everything that was supposedly wrong in the Trayvon Martin case.
That's right. Because the Trayvon Martin case was, I mean, come on, it's clear that the girl was unarmed, right?
Mm-hmm.
She's an unarmed person committing a crime. We
don't know if Trayvon was casing any joints, but we've automatically given him a pass. He's got a criminal history. He's done some
Yes, he does.
Yeah, what's he doing with female jewelry and a burglary tool?
And was he convicted?
Well, okay, but it doesn't mean he didn't commit a crime.
Well, you can't prove it. You can't say it. Nor is it admissible in a court of law.
Caught with women's jewelry and a burglary device.
I picked it up and I found it. But I haven't been convicted of anything.
I picked it up and I found it.
We're talking facts, Reese.
Oh, come on. You know
he hasn't been convicted.
The facts mean nothing in the press.
Oh, my gosh. No, but still, it's not admissible in court. It wouldn't be admissible in court.
Okay.
In fact, the defense could even bring that up in court.
Why couldn't they?
Because it has nothing to do with this case.
But it does go to character, does it? Does it not?
Does it go to character? Only if the prosecution opens the door for it, opens the can of beans for it, yeah.
Well, sure enough, they are, because they keep calling him an innocent child.
From that day, he was.
Okay, well,
he had a right to be where he was.
Yeah, I understand. But I'm just saying, this 17-year-old girl, no one's talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
No one even jumps on it. They want to. Don't get me wrong. They want to.
I mean, it's sad and it's awful that someone's child, again, has gotten shot. They happen to be unarmed. But in this case, she was committing a crime. I hate for anybody's child to get killed. I mean, I'm being a father. I can imagine what the parents are going through. I really can't.
Well, I'm just saying, I really don't care that you got shot in the head. I'm just annoyed at the fact that somebody would report this story as if to make her out to be some victim. Because they're making the police answer questions. You know, to answer questions. You know, what's the deal? Would she be charged with a crime? Because that's the part about this story that I didn't like. Is that the reporter said he asked the officer if she were to survive, would she be charged with a crime? As if to say, hasn't she suffered enough? She caught a bullet in the head. I mean, you know, that's the part.
I would protest that they charge her. I will sit off Sharpton down in Alabama, and yes, I want her charged.
So wait. So you're saying that, okay, so if the police department says to her or says to the community, look, we're charging the other three boys. We're going to put them in jail. We're going to make them go through trial. But the girl who got shot in the head, nah, we're going to give her a pass. She suffered. Most agonizing part of this a process, she got a bullet to the head. So we'll call it, you know, it's a quid pro quo. We'll let bygones be bygones. You caught a bullet, they're going to get some jail time. You paid your penance.
No. I say we march on them. We march on Alabama and we make them treat her like they treat our children.
She's not in Alabama. She's in Pensacola.
I thought it was Alabama.
No, she's in Pensacola.
Well, we're going to start in Alabama because that's where all the good marches start at.
Well, this is interesting because I know that what they're trying to do, they want this girl to be some sort of martyr in this crime by saying, oh, come on, she's probably going to be a vegetable. You can't charge her. No, damn it, you charge her.
Yes.
You got to charge her. You can't be turning around saying because you... I mean, come on. How many times have you seen a guy get shot stealing a car or robbing a bank?
Or suppose one of those other kids had gotten shot and killed and she ran away.
Yeah.
In fact, I say charge those boys if she dies. Charge the boys with murder.
Yeah, wait. Didn't we have that? We had, in the beginning of our show, when we first started this show, we had the case where the young girl, her husband or boyfriend had died.
Had died
of some sort of cancer or something. She was
the old man.
she was in the she was in the apartment with her 6 month old baby. She was feeding them, she was breastfeeding the baby or whatever the case was, and she got the shotgun out and she called 911.
And asked for permission to shoot him.
They said, he said, I can't give you permission, but if he comes into that door, you do what you got to do. He opens the door, she shoots him, and they charge his accomplice with murder.
That's right.
So you're absolutely right here. And it's funny, I'm glad you mentioned that. It brought that to my attention. So in this case, the three boys, if she dies, then those three boys should be charged with murder.
Yes.
They should be charged. I didn't think of that. I like that perspective. That perspective works for me. Because then it's of no fault to the person who's protecting his property. But the boys are juveniles. Do you think they'll get much time?
Charge them as adults. How old are they? 17 too?
They're like 16. One was 15 and I think another one was 16.
Charge them as adults.
Yeah, it is Florida, right?
They're close. They can't get an election street.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, you got to charge them. Charge them with her death if she dies. But I don't want anybody mourning for some criminal. That's the part that I don't like. I don't want people mourning for criminals just because she's a girl.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't want anybody treating her like she's some sort of victim here.
She's committing a crime.
That's right. Pay the price, goddammit.
And let her get electrocuted or sliced up on barbed wire, and then the parents go ahead and sue. And the parents will go ahead and sue the homeowner or wherever they were, the owners of that property, and end up winning in court a huge sum of money.
Yeah, that's exactly.
Because his daughter got stabbed up. That happens a lot in this country.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You know what? Just pass the savings off to the boys. Make them be charged. That's what you do. That makes sense to me. I ain't crying for you, sweetheart. Summer Moody. Kept your ass at home doing homework. Speech on the radio, Moody.
Right where you are, don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
In Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey, guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Jared Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
Hi, how you doing?
I don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekday here on blogtalkradio.com.
Exciting things are happening at Burger King.
Welcome to Burger King.
What's in those new chicken snack wraps?
Mary?
Crispy chicken, fresh lettuce, three cheeses, fresh dressing, wrapped up in the tasty lava tortilla. Crispy chicken, wrapped up in
the new chicken snack wraps. Come and get it.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio. And let me tell you something. Nothing makes my job more perfect than interacting with you, the listeners of the Reese on the Radio show. Eric, you're on with Reese.
Hey, first of all, I want to say that you are very refreshing, my friend.
Thank you, Eric.
I do think there's too much emphasis on the race card.
Sure.
I'm sick of people who want to be treated exactly like everybody else as long as we recognize that they're different.
Yes, that's it. Chris, you're on with Reese.
Yes, hi, Reese. I just had to rebuff that guy that called you and said your arguments were weak.
Sure.
He's basing his vote on something you said, and
he's talking about my arguments weak,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, what a hypocrite. Well, I hope he's still listening. Buddy, you're a hypocrite. You shouldn't even be allowed to vote.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. Steve, you're on with Reese.
Hey, Reese, I got to compliment you. You were wonderful handling that guy who was going to base his whole decision on something you said, which you handled it well. I think you just sealed the deal with the listeners, and you're doing a wonderful job. That's all I wanted to say.
Steve, thank you very, very much, and I appreciate that. It's Reese on the Radio right here, 8 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton, and Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life. In Congress, Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom, Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
If you're not listening to Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, you've got no idea what you're missing. From the Daily Caller, Mr. Matthew Boyle. Matthew, thank you very much for joining us. I'm glad you took some time out for us.
Great to be here, Ray.
Who do we have on the line?
All right. This is Sean Quali, National Spokesman for Black Panther Party.
Sean Quali, thank you very much for contacting us and being on the show. For all the news and the people making news, make sure you check out Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Warning, the sounds you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. It's Reese on the Radio. And we're back right here on blogtalkradio.com. 28 minutes after the hour. Now, look, I don't know who is doing this. Also, it's always important that I mention the date. It's April the 23rd, 2012. They always tell you in radio, when you do radio, it's always most important. You mention three things. You mention the date, the time, and the weather. Anyway, I'm not mentioning the weather. there are something really, really odd that I'm finding out. So here on Blog Talk.
Hold on, before we go on, I know we're about to jump into a story, but did you guys get snow down there?
No snow.
Just cool rain.
No snow over here. Yeah. There was some snow over in western Pennsylvania and in western New York. But no, we didn't get anything. We just got rain and we got wind.
Lots of snow. We got none. All we got was rain.
Yeah. It's a nor'easter. Nothing big. Nothing.
Yeah, I was kind of cool that we actually got it because our fire departments have been fighting brush fires in Connecticut, of all places.
Yeah, I know, and you've got no water. I know. So, yeah, it was actually much needed water, I heard.
Yeah, that's crazy. When do we get brush fires in Connecticut? It's unheard of.
Yeah, it was. But again, it was an unseasonably warm winter. That's probably pretty much what it was.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. Back to our regularly scheduled story.
Regularly scheduled program. I want to mention this. Of course, if you don't have an account with Blog Talk Radio, you don't know this. So let me give you a little insight, give you a little view behind the curtain. So every morning when I get up, the first thing I always check on Blog Talk Radio is I always pay attention to how often the show and our page on Blog Talk Radio, we get hits. You know, if people are checking out Blog Talk Radio. And I do that every morning. Not pretty much because I'm concerned, but it's always nice to know what it is that the listener is paying attention to. What are the stories or what are the shows that we do that really impact the audience? Because I believe that when you're doing radio, it's always important that you get the feedback from the audience. They make you. The audience is who is responsible for your success or lack thereof. So that's the reason why I check. It's really, I mean, it may appear to be egotistical, but it's not. I have to explain why it's not egotistical. It can't be egotistical for me because I want to do the show that people can enjoy and talk about the things that you enjoy and bring some humor into it. I like making you guys laugh and saying some crazy stuff that's on my mind and my views. And, you know, people interact with that and flip on me and I entertain. You know, it's something that I enjoy to do. I love this more than anything in the world that I can think of. So it's always important to go there. So I was looking this morning. I have no idea when I checked it out. I looked at some of the shows that we did over the past 2 weeks. And Friday's show got an overwhelming response. People had gone and re-listened to the show. Really. I mean, it was astronomical. Then I went back to a couple of weeks ago, almost a month ago even, to check out another show, and it was double what Friday's show was in the archives. And that was, to me, I went, whoa! Then I couldn't believe it. Then I actually saw one of our shows posted on YouTube. Now, that I didn't expect. But it was posted on YouTube by someone who was a guest on the show. So that was interesting, and it happened to be the show that had gotten this overwhelming response. So you can listen to the show live, of course. You go to blogtalkradio.com/Reese on the Radio to listen to the show live. You can listen on your phone. You can listen on your smartphone if you want to. You can listen anytime you want. You know, you can go back and listen to the show, listen to past shows. The descriptions of the show and what we're talking about are there. You can listen to it. But I was stunned because I was seeing that the growing popularity of the show in the archive level was fascinating to me. So I want to thank each and every one of you, even if it was just to catch me saying something that you could use against me. That's fine. I'm glad that you're listening. That we've got something important to say and you find it important enough to listen to. So I appreciate it. I just wanted to mention that.
That totally rocks.
Yeah, it does. Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's off the hook.
Hey, look, if they're going back and they're listening to our show, that's great. People are it's appointment radio, I believe, and we try to make it appointment radio. Speaking of appointments, I wanted to talk about this last week, but I didn't get an opportunity to. I talked to you earlier about this, JC, and Mike Tyson has a one-man show in Las Vegas, which after I saw this particular show or this particular interview with Mike Tyson, I can understand why they would do this because wow, man, to sit there and listen to Mike Tyson behind the scenes saying some really raw things about his life could possibly be interesting. And we've seen it from the likes of John Leguizamo. Imagine John Leguizamo and
balding gray had a black child who grew up to be a boxer who bit
Evander Holyfield's ear. I don't know. That's the best way I can describe it.
It was that. It's that kind of thing. And Mike Tyson just tells really, really raw stories about what he's done
throughout his career, his life,
growing up. And it's a two-hour show. And I'm asking myself, like, man, can I sit and listen to 2 hours of Mike Tyson with the list and stuff? Can I really do that? And I don't know whether or not I can do that. It would be ludicrous. But I'm listening to this interview, and I got this little outtake from it because I didn't know anybody. And here he's talking about stuff that he left out of the one-man show, the two-hour show in Las Vegas.
Cocaine, prostitutes, crime, street brawl, lawsuits, and loneliness. And that doesn't even include the stuff he left out.
I didn't talk about getting a jail official, a prison official pregnant and stuff.
What do you mean you got a jail official pregnant?
Yeah, that's just what happened.
This'll be in the next show.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, my prostitutes and stuff. Oh, I love this stuff. I'm sorry.
Tyson talked about going back to Brooklyn to rob people, even as a pro. About being sent to the psych ward after biting Holyfield's ears. He was as up and down as his career. Raw, sweet, disgusting, funny, and through it all, knock you back in your chair, honest.
I just wanted to get home and smoke my weed, man.
It was not Sinatra, but he did it his way. And hey, at $99 a ticket, for a boxer fighting his way through financial ruin, it's a living.
You said something totally odd tonight. You said, I dressed up nice tonight, but I'm really still an animal. But you didn't seem like an animal.
No, you know, all animals are not wild either. A lot of them are domesticated, you know.
Absolutely breathtaking to me. I thought that, and that's just a minute and 15 seconds of like a 6-minute interview that I watched. And that whole scene was breathtaking to me. And not just about getting the prison, you know, official pregnant, which, again, I still find astonishing, but the stuff that this guy, I mean, he went and robbed people in Brooklyn while he was a pro. He was a pro boxer. He had a professional career, and he was still running through the hood robbing people.
And millions in the bank.
Exactly. And again, one of the most compelling, you know, at one point you want to say things about Mike Tyson where you say, oh, this guy's a moron. But then he said that great line at the end. You know, it's like, you know, he put on a suit, but, the, you know, he puts on a nice suit, but inside he's still an animal. And he says that one thing, he's like, hey, you know, even some animals are domesticated. Which is brilliant. It's such a brilliant comeback. You know, Mike Tyson is a domesticated animal, in his own words, even. But I guess I can agree. And I want to see this show. I want to see this show. He is still, because of who he is and what he does and what he's done, what he accomplished, his rise, his fall. I guess there's a little bit of Schadenfreude. You know, encapsulated in that. I guess it's a little bit of that. It's not because I don't really find any joy in watching him fail. He's kind of the, you know, bad guy you wish would just redeem himself because there are moments when he does. I'll never forget when I was locked up. I was on Rikers Island, and I'll never forget the morning that I found out that his daughter. Had died choking on some exercise equipment at his home. I'll never forget that story. And when the story broke, and I remember literally how my heart broke when that happened. And I said, if there was anything that would make Mike Tyson get it together, it had to be that, the loss of his baby girl.
I know how tough that had to have been on him. And I remember seeing him on Oprah after that happened, when he talked about that, and he was so honest on Oprah. A lot of people criticized him for that interview, but what he said to Oprah was that when his daughter died, that he really started to find himself going back into that animal mode. He wanted to go ape. And a guy like Mike Tyson, you can see where something like that, a guy who already had that temperament, could take a situation like that and could have this screw-the-world mentality. Especially with a character like Mike Tyson. You know, this is a guy who I could imagine just running through the streets, knocking a Negro out and killing him because he was just absolutely untamed, unhinged. That's what I could see. But all that time when I heard it happen, I said, people are going to look at Mike Tyson in a different way after that happened. Because of all the jokes and all the things that you could say about Mike Tyson, all the ridicule and the scrutiny he had received, the 1992 rape charge, with everything that people have said about it, that it would bring everybody to a sense of humanity when this man lost his daughter. For me, it was almost full circle. Here it is, a man who's accused and charged of rape and then has a daughter and the daughter dies. For me, it was almost, not like karma. I'm not saying he deserved that. Don't misrepresent what I'm saying. I don't want anybody to misinterpret what I'm saying. But it would give you a full scope of who Mike Tyson was, because in the beginning you sort of think of Mike Tyson as an animal who doesn't care about women, and here it is, he has a little girl who died, so you see the humanity in him and the rage in him after he finds out that his daughter dies. It finds out that you sort of have to look back and you have to go, wow, Mike Tyson really is human.
And it's not only that, but come on, that rape situation, that was very, very sketchy to begin with.
We all know that. But it was the 90s. It was the 90s. It was 1992. And it was an era where things like rape charges were highly scrutinized. The appearance of anybody being charged with rape was heavily scrutinized. I mean, if you were caught, if you were accused of it, for that matter. And, you know, that was the case. So, you know, people forget, you know, Reverend Run, you know, of Run DMC. He got accused of rape, too. People forget that. You know? There's some people out there who, you know, they had to deal with that kind of stuff. And I don't know where was Reverend Run? Was he in? I know he was in one of the states that begin with an I. It was either Indiana or Iowa or Illinois. One of those. I'm almost certain. But that was in the 90s. And that charge, it didn't matter. You know, you got accused, that was it. And yes, we all know the Mike Tyson case. Yeah, it was really, really sketchy at best. But he got convicted. But I think for me, watching how he responded to his daughter dying, and when he had that interview with Oprah, that really opened my eyes to who he was. You know, it really made him human to me.
He's a troubled and tortured soul, I mean, for many, many years.
Totally.
Who was able to channel his energy into a sport that he excelled in, made a lot of money, and then was taken advantage of.
Yeah, exactly. I think a guy like Mike Tyson, as young as he was, who had no proper training as far as finances were concerned,
he could easily
be manipulated.
But, you know, speaking of the 1990s Mike Tyson, the Mike Tyson that you see now was pretty much the Mike Tyson that I met at the birthday party in Farmington when he bought the house out there.
Please tell me. I don't know the story.
Before Hot 97 was here, WRTC is where I was. WQTQ were the only other radio stations in the area that did hip-hop and R&B. Being the only African American radio stations in the area that catered to the African American public. We were invited to the birthday party.
Okay.
The DJ.
I remember this. This was a big deal.
Yeah, it was a huge deal. I met Oprah there.
That's right. It was a big. Yeah, I remember. It was a big
deal. That's the house that 50 Cent now has up for sale.
Right.
That he can't sell.
Yeah, I know.
But it was an awesome affair. But that Mike Tyson is the Mike Tyson that you see now, that you're seeing now. But his persona, his public persona, because of his very public
meltdowns.
Meltdowns and what was perceived by the public, or what was shown to the public by media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're only going to show the worst. Everybody had already bought into the fact that the guy was an animal.
Mm-hmm.
And to a degree, he was. And he basically lived up to what the media made him to be. I believe.
I mean, you think he lived up to it?
Yeah, I think he did. I really think he did, because that Mike Tyson that I met that day was a very, very, very different person than every other DJ that went to that party would tell you the same thing. Mike is not like who he appears to be on TV.
Hmm.
I mean, and what I think Don King made it worse, and that's my opinion, not the opinion of the shows, but you know that's my opinion. I think what finally made them split was when Don King sold his character and likeness on him, and he sold it dirt cheap.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of truth to that. But I think what happened to Mike Tyson, in a lot of ways, was...
Too much too soon?
Well, it was a lot very soon, exactly. It's almost like dealing with a child star, you know?
Right.
To make the poorest comparison, I'd like to consider Mike Tyson the Gary Coleman of boxing. You know what I mean?
Well,
he had people who he thought he could trust, at the head of all of his finances, and then completely took advantage of him because he trusted them, because they kind of made him a rock star, and he was.
Yeah, he was. That he was. I really think that had Customato lived,
mm-hmm.
we would have seen a very different Tyson.
I believe that too.
We see a Tyson that will go down in the annals of boxing and in pop culture, much like a Muhammad Ali.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it was Customato's passing was almost tailor-made for the destruction of Mike Tyson. It was almost as if it was a script being written.
Right.
You know,
right.
Outside of itself. It's like, you know, for that relationship to be tarnished and end, you know, and Mike Tyson to be out there on his own, a man on an island, you know, he's responsible for every one of his own actions, but here was a guy who needed guidance. It was clear he needed guidance. He was in, I mean, from the beginning of his life, it was clear that what he had was savagery around him. Here was a man who grabbed him, molded him, turned him into this fighter, made him a champion, and then died, but didn't leave him with enough to be able to survive. And when you don't have that kind of support system, you turn into the person that you are. And Mike Tyson's a different man today because, unfortunately, now he has that guidance and he has the friendships, and the people who he's involved with are much, it's much different now. His friendships are leaps and bounds better than what they were in the beginning of his career.
Right.
You know,
and I had so many public leeches, public
sure.
figures that were leeches, like washed up celebrities that were he was basically starstruck to be around and to be thrilled that they actually liked him or wanted to be around him, and it made for a bad mix, man. It really made for a bad mix.
It was pretty awful for him, but I have to be honest with you. I'm hoping that there is a video of this one-man show, because it's something I've got to see.
Yeah, definitely. By all means.
we're going to see a side of Mike Tyson that we never saw before.
And talk about getting some answers.
You know what? Before we go,
sure.
YouTube him and check him out on like some of those Dancing with the Stars from the other countries.
Really?
Yeah, he did Dance for the Stars in Italy. He did.
No.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yes.
Send me a link.
Gotcha.
Send me a link. I'm dying to watch that.
He danced his ass off. Surprised me.
Wow. That's interesting. Hey, we'll stay with some more celebrity news. John Lovett goes off on Barack Obama. We'll come back. Streets on the Radio.
Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Trying a brand new menu item at McDonald's isn't risky. You know what's risky? Petting a stray pit bull or shaving your head just to see how it would look. That's risky. Naming your son Sue, super risky. Giving your friends your Facebook password, ultra risky. So trying a new menu item at McDonald's is about a zero on the old risker scale. Try a snack size of our new Chicken McBites for free with purchase of any extra value meal from January 30th through February 5th. New at McDonald's means no risk, delicious reward. Participation may vary.
I tried a lot of car.
We will not take a dime from Washington lobbyists or special interest facts. They will not fund my party. They will not run our White House. We're going to change how Washington works.
This headline in today's New York Times sure seems at odds with that promise to put Washington on the side of the little guy, not the lobbyists.
A rather long list of names of people who are working on Obama's transition team or who have accepted jobs in his White House.
I'm in this race to tell the lobbyists in Washington that their days of setting the agenda are over. They will not work in my White House.
The administration has hired several lobbyists, the president of a lobbying firm that worked for General Motors and Fannie Mae.
Sally Sussman leads Pfizer's powerful lobbying shop. She's organized events for the president, and she's also donated money for the president and bundled for him.
Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner appointed former top lobbyist for Goldman Sachs as his chief of staff, appointed to the number two position at the Defense Department, a former top lobbyist.
Hundreds of meetings between Obama administration officials and lobbyists, and no official record of who.
The number of fundraisers for the president have also benefited hugely from the energy loan program.
Isn't the president opening himself up to just a charge of hypocrisy on this?
Just a litany of people who have raised so much money who are clearly lobbyists.
President Obama hasn't even made a token effort to keep his campaign promises of more openness and transparency. It was all just another lie that was told in order to get elected.
The Republic.
Hi, Bill Maher here. Sarah Palin agreed to do commentary at Fox News, which is actually very similar to her day job, talking to a baby with Down syndrome.
Speaking of dumb f***s,
it's not because they have breasts, it's because they are boobs.
I hope Sarah Palin gets in so that they split the MILF vote.
That's not sexist.
I would like to announce a donation to the Obama Super PAC.
I thought about Malia and Sasha. I want them to be able to speak their mind in a civil and thoughtful way, and I don't want them attacked or called horrible names because they're being good citizens.
I would like to give that PAC $1 million. Sarah Palin, the strange family of inbred weirdos. Levi, over and over until a baby fell out. The Maverick and the Mill. They fined CBS $1 million for Janet Jackson's nipple. Think what they could get for Hillary Clinton's cunt. That's not sexist.
All decent folks can agree. The remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse.
She is the chair of the Democratic National Committee.
I don't know any woman in America that thinks that being called a slut is funny.
Please welcome Representative Debbie Wasserman Schultz.
Being part of a democracy involves argument and disagreements and debate, and there's a way to do it that doesn't involve you being demeaned and insulted.
Speaking of dumb fucks, this is a Category 5 moron we have on our hands, and I am unapologetic.
Yeah.
Top 10 highlights of Sarah Palin's trip to New York City. Number two, bought makeup at Bloomingdale's, update her slutty flight attendant look.
I'm going to try to lead by example. During the seventh inning, her daughter was knocked up by Alex Rodriguez.
To send a message to all our young people, I'm going to try to lead by example.
Speaking of dumb squats, Marr decided to help President Obama out and give him a financial boost.
He's donated $1 million.
Last week, I said goodbye to $1 million. I made a contribution to Obama's super PAC.
This ends up being a teachable moment.
I wouldn't put anything past this stupid country.
All decent folks can agree the remarks that were made don't have any place in the public discourse. I'm going to try to lead by example in this situation.
You're seeing a president adopt policies which affect our economy based not upon what's right for the American worker, but instead what's right for their politics. The National Labor Relations Board, now stacked with union stooges selected by the president, says to a free enterprise like Boeing, you can't build a factory in South Carolina because South Carolina is a right-to-work state. That is simply un-American. It's political payback of the worst kind. It is wrong for America, and it is something that will stop under my administration. I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Songs from the 80s by the Romantics, Talking in Your Sleep. A lot of people remember that song. That was a track back in the day. It was, at least it was for me.
Nonetheless, like I said, 4 minutes to the top of the hour. When we come back, we have to get into John Lovitz. This audio that I'm about to play for you at the top of the hour explains, and it captures exactly what it is. Exactly what it is that people are starting to see about the Obama campaign. And there are people out there who have the guts enough to speak up. And all you have to do is be practical. All you have to do is be pragmatic. And you will see it. And John Lovitz, who's opened up a new comedy club, is doing this podcast, apparently this series, called the ABCs of SNL, the ABCs of Saturday Night Live, and he's on stage in front of people talking about how ticked off he is at Barack Obama. Now, it's language-filled. I have to do a lot of editing on this. But when he breaks it down, what's going on with Obama and how it gets to the core of people who are out there trying to make something for themselves, you'll hear what it is that I'm talking about. And lastly, and we got to get Montgomery on the phone for this one. We're going to try to get him on the phone to talk about gun control. Now, I went over this article by Ann Coulter. She's a conservative commentator. She's very inflammatory. But that's what I like about her. She almost reminds me of myself, but I am not a tall, skinny blonde. She reminds me of myself, but what I love about her...
tall, skinny black.
That's right. Yeah, so I'm a tall, skinny black.
And Ann Coulter has this article, which you can actually read on the Daily Caller. The article is called The Racist History of Gun Control Laws. And she's calling for African Americans to get out and get yourself a gun and join the NRA, the National Rifle Association. And I read this, and I read it backwards and forwards, and I loved it. Loved it. Because the one thing that Ann Coulter does, which a lot of people on the left don't do, is break down the history of racism in this country in such a way. And we'll read the article when we come back. We'll do that in the second part of the half hour. But when we return, we'll get into John Lovitz and why it is that even though he voted for Barack Obama, he's sick of him now. When we return, it's Reese on the Radio. Stick around. We'll be right back.
Barack Obama. Well, he's just not black enough. Why? Because he's light-skinned and articulate? Because he paid back his student loans? Because he's married to his baby's mama? No, his character's not black, but his lips is blacker than a motherfucker. Okay. Them some cool Filter King lips if I ever seen cool Filter King lips. And that's black enough for me.
Television's a goddamn amusement park. Television is a circus, a carnival, a traveling troupe of acrobats, storytellers, dancers, singers, jugglers, sideshow freaks, lion tamers, and football players. We're in the boredom-killing business. So if you want the truth, go to God. Go to your gurus. Go to yourselves. Because that's the only place you're ever going to find any real truth. So turn off your television sets. Turn them off now. Turn them off right now. Turn them off and leave them off. Turn them off right in the middle of a sentence I'm speaking to you now. Turn them off.
Come on.
All the humanity and all the...
Mary had a little lamb, it was white as snow, and everywhere that Mary went, the lamb was sure to go.
Turn on, tune in, and drop out.
Yeah, I'm super cool.
Ah!
I never once said, Nagada.
I think everyone wants to know where we came from and how the universe began.
You know what I'm saying?
I have sinned against you.
It's Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. 1 minute after the hour, top of the hour on this April the 23rd, 2012. Just to let you all know that I did not partake in any 420. Not that that even matters. Apparently everybody else did. They were all over the place with that ridiculousness.
Well, I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't know anything about it either.
I plead the fifth.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
I ain't plead no fifth. I'm a damn law-abiding citizen.
Anyway, okay, so.
I got glaucoma.
You got glaucoma. Okay, so as I talked
about... At least you said glaucoma and not cataracts like Snoop Dogg did.
last hour, I wanted to get into this. And this, again, as I said, is the heart of the problem that Democrats... And they won't mention it. They don't have enough guts to mention it. And I'm pretty sure that John Lovitz is not going to be happy that this audio came out. He's not going to be happy because... He's really, really ripping apart President Obama. And he makes a strong case. And I didn't know this much. I mean, I kind of figured out that John Lovitz was a liberal. I know that he's a Democrat. Of course, I know, like every other liberal elite, he voted for President Obama. But then when he, you know, started making some money and really started to become a success, John Lovitz has had a long road of success. He went from Saturday Night Live. He had a couple of bit parts in films. He hasn't really starred in a film, but, you know, you've seen him in The Wedding Planner. He had a bit part. He's kind of that guy who shows up in a movie and has a funny role. John Lovitz has been around for a long time, but he's got some...
He had a huge part in Private Parts.
In the movie Private Parts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, with Howard Stern.
Right.
Right. But no,
his
I mean,
vomit.
Yeah. No, that's not. It's Paul Giamatti, man.
No, I beg to differ.
Paul Giamatti is pig vomit in Private Parts.
I beg to differ.
Look it up. I'm
okay.
Almost certain.
Okay.
Anyway, Paul Giamatti's in that film. But anyway, breaking it down, John Lovitz has had, I wouldn't call it an esteemed career, but you know his name. You're familiar with him as a comedian. So when I heard this, I was stunned. Because you can hear, although it's joking, you can hear the frustration in his voice.
You're right.
Thank you. you can hear the frustration in his voice when he's talking about it. And again, this is not tongue-in-cheek, but you see, when you hear it yourself, you'll figure it out yourself. But listen, barring all the cursing, I have to mention this, barring all the cursing, just listen to the rage in his voice.
This whole thing with Obama
thing, the rich don't pay their taxes, is fucking bullshit. And I voted for the guy and I'm a Democrat. What a fucking ad. The rich don't pay their taxes. Let me tell you something, right? First they say to you, you're dead broke. The United States of America, you can do anything you want. Go for it. So then you go for it, and then you make it, and everyone's like, fuck you. Yeah, you just said go for it. He himself is the perfect example. He's amazing. He had nothing. He had no father. He was, you know, mixed race, which is a burden in the United States. Don't kid yourself, you know, growing up like that. And no money, and the guy ends up being at Harvard. He's the president of the United States.
And you're like, fuck
and
you.
He's like, and now he's like, fuck me. And everyone who made it like me, it's like, you know, you have to work your ass off, you know.
Yeah.
If I make a dollar, and out of every dollar, I'm taxed at 50, half of 50 cents I have to give. Isn't that, like, enough?
Yes.
So for every dollar you make, $2, you have to give a dollar back. That's not right. No, you're not paying enough. It's half.
Yeah, I feel you. I pay
half.
Yeah.
And then they go, well, the rich people have all these deductions. Well, everyone in this room has the same deductions. You just didn't learn about it. But you have the exact same deductions. You can deduct. Did you drive a car? Did you take it to work? Deduct it.
Hey.
Did you eat at lunch? Deduct it.
Stop yelling at the 99%.
It's my club.
Yeah, but don't burn it down, man. Occupy, love it.
Oh, yeah, and then, so I take my hard-earned money and I open a club. Now all of you are here. Help me. Hello? It's ridiculous.
So you hear what I'm saying? It's like the breakdown is like guys like John Lovitz, you know, he's breaking his ass to make something of himself. It's not like he ended up being Adam Sandler. It's not like he ended up being David Spade, for crying out loud, of Saturday Night Live. The guy's got a TV show. John Lovitz got nothing. Everything he gets is from the bit parts that he gets. Literally, he does. He's one of the most struggling. Even Anna Gasteyer is on a freaking TV show. She's on Suburgatory. Okay? I mean, if it was Lorraine Newman. I mean, look at the people who came from Saturday Night Live who have nothing. Nothing. Now, they got nothing going on. And John Lovitz, just like all those people who they know, and I know where his animus is coming from, and if you listen to the rest of the audio, please check out the podcast. If you listen to the rest of it, what he's saying is that when he was at Saturday Night Live, and you listen to the rest of it, he's talking about Saturday Night Live, is that at Saturday Night Live, there's a culture of supporting guys like Barack Obama because they're all liberal. And John Lovitz is sitting up there going, man, look, I supported this guy because I believe that, look, he came from nothing and he became the president of the United States. He's going to support a guy like me. That's the kind of Democrat I want. And then he tries to do something. He opens up a club and he starts getting wealthy and somebody turns around and goes, you're not paying your fair share. And of course he's sitting up there going, whoa. I worked really hard, man. It's not like I didn't do anything to get here. I went on Saturday Night Live. I did bit parts. I was a writer. I have to come up with new comedy material. I had to go out there and go audition for movies. I had to work really hard for what it is that I own. And now this son of a bitch is telling me that I'm not paying my fair share. You'll take 50 cents of every dollar. You take a dollar of every $2. And now you're telling me I'm not paying my fair share? That's bull. And that's what it is that is people coming to the realization. Guys like John Lovitz are realizing it because there are people out there who are making craps of millions of dollars,
billions.
Who can, billions if not, who can get those deductions. And he's talking about it. He goes, yeah, you know, you can use those deductions too. But, you know, he's sick and tired of people talking about how he's not paying his fair share because he's wealthy. And he is what's John Lovitz? He's a small business owner because he opened up a comedy store that probably employs about 20 to 30 people. And he's got to pay what? Health insurance. He's got to pay for, he's got to pay for what? Building code. He's got to follow building code. He's got to buy supplies. He's got to make sure that people have their unemployment insurance that he's got to match. All of that money's coming out of his pocket. So he's got to get a profit. And then when he gets a profit, somebody turns around and says, well, you're wealthy and your club is doing well and you need to pay more. Like he's not doing enough. So how's John Lovitz not paying his fair share?
So that is where that frustration is coming from, and I think it's bogus. And there are guys like him, and I know they are. I know they're sitting around there, and they're ticked off. John Lovitz may have been caught with the mic on in his own comedy club, but you know that he's getting phone calls right now. Hey, John, you know, yeah, the conservative websites, yeah, they've got, yeah, they're playing the audio bit. You said, man, you don't look like you're supporting the president. And John Lovitz is going to have to answer to that. And he's probably going to get blacklisted. I'll put any amount of money on it. He's going to get blacklisted. If not, called to the carpet. I think they're going to be out there to rip him apart. And they're not going to support him because, what? He doesn't support. He doesn't toe the line. I guess that's the best way to put it. He doesn't toe the line. That's why I'm actually impressed that he did it. You know, hey, he went after that, you know, after those three teenage girls who went after his friend's daughter, and now he's going after the president. I've always kind of liked this comedy.
Did the president call his friend's daughter?
Of course not. Of course not.
Did they make an arrest?
Nope.
Passover and
nope.
Easter is over?
I don't, you know, that's interesting. I don't know the follow-up to that story. I'm going to see if there is. Speaking of follow-ups. Oh, I'm so glad you mentioned that, Mayor. There is a very important follow-up to a story that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. Well, maybe a week ago. That turned out, I told you, I said I was trying to figure out what this scheme was about the company in the Bronx. That was
the Obama money.
The Obama money scam that was in the Bronx. Thank you for mentioning that because this was something I wanted to mention today. Here's a follow-up to the story we originally told last week about a E&M a tax company that had a line going around the corner of poor people in the Bronx saying that they were being promised $1,000 on a debit card, on a bank card, if they gave over their information, their social security number, their EBT card, or their benefits card, whatever it is that they had, and they would get $1,000 from a bank. Well, here's a follow-up to that story that happened last week.
Well, now to an Eyewitness News exclusive. The city and state taking action after our story this week. People showing up to a local tax preparer who promised them prepaid debit cards. Today, investigators showed up. Eyewitness News reporter Sarah Wallace, live in the Bronx with the NYPD, raided the office today. Sarah.
Well, Dave, the lines that wound around the block for days trying to get into the storefront right here are now gone. The business is shut down and the owner is under arrest. But what is far from over is the worry for people who gave their personal information to a man who cops say ran a multi-million dollar ripoff. We watched this morning as state tax criminal investigators and NYPD cops raided the office of E&M Multi-Services in the Bronx, hauling out computers and boxes of records belonging to this man. When we confronted owner Mark Goldberg the other day, he maintained,
I'm going to say this once to you, okay? I run an income tax business, okay?
It was a large scam that you can collect millions of dollars over only a few couple of months.
An alleged scam that had customers lining up outside the storefront for weeks, handing over copies of their Social Security and Medicaid cards and state IDs, believing they would get government stimulus money that would be placed on prepaid debit cards.
So you thought you'd get a total of $900?
Yeah.
But the prices was all different prices. Not everybody didn't get $900. Some people got $700. Some people got $800. It depends on, the, I guess, whatever little scam he was running up in there.
Most customers told us they never got money on their cards. Law enforcement sources say they believe Goldberg falsified benefit information on tax returns or submitted fraudulent returns to get money, which he would keep for himself.
And then when you turn somebody that you're getting $900 back, $1,000, you know, they're going to go for that.
Get the camera on my face.
For several days, we tried to get answers to our questions, but were blocked by Goldberg's security team. His operation shrouded in secrecy, but it was all exposed today.
That was just one part of the story because for some odd reason on ABC News, they cut the audio short. That was just one part. Here's the second part of the story when they did a later news report on the story, and I cannot seem to find. There it is. There it is. Scam number two. Here we go.
Carolina, thank you. Now an Eyewitness News exclusive. 2 days after we told you about a questionable tax preparer trying to lure people to offer personal information in exchange for a free prepaid debit card, the company has been busted by authorities. So what happens now to the people who gave up their personal information? WJ reporter Sarah Wallace is in the Bronx with the story. Sarah.
Well, Bill, a very good question. Certainly anybody who did business with the now defunct E&M Multi-Services here in the Bronx should keep an eye on their credit. The owner is now under arrest, and law enforcement sources tell us that he had $400,000 in his personal account when it was frozen yesterday. Someone said he robbed the community.
Yes, he raped the community.
They are angry in this community where desperate people lined up day after day, falsely believing they would get government stimulus money on prepaid debit cards issued by a tax preparation business called E&M Multi-Services. Today, people who'd handed over their personal information, including copies of Social Security cards, watched as New York State investigators and the NYPD raided the second floor office, seizing records and computers. You came to pick up your car, thought you'd get money, now you see this.
Now I see this. I'm cynical. I'm shocked. Like, what's going on?
This is a big thing. This is a big mill. Big tax mill.
How much?
Like I said, this is millions of dollars. He was scamming. We believe he was scamming.
We tried to get answers from owner Mark Goldberg a few days ago. Are you telling everybody they'll get $1,000?
No, ma'am. Do you understand English? I said no. No, I got business.
He is now under arrest, suspected of filing false returns on behalf of unsuspecting customers to get big refunds, then keeping a cut for himself.
And he said, you're on public assistance, I could get you $5,000. I will file you self-employed, I will get you your paperwork, stating that you work wherever.
She says she balked, and Goldberg threatened her.
He threatened that he would...
So, according to the scam, he was just taking people's identity and then filing false claims. Now, I got to be honest. I've seen this before. Now, what I'm about to tell you, I'm about to drop big dime. I've seen this before. And let me just say this. One of the people responsible for discovering Chris Brown has done this scam.
Who, Usher?
No. One of the guys who's responsible for this. That's all I'll say. One of the guys who's responsible for discovering Chris Brown does this scam. And I've seen it done. And you have them file as self-employed in the whole nine yards, and it's gotten as much as $2,000 for that person. Seen it done. That's right. Seen it done. One of the people responsible, yep, had Chris Brown when he was in these wee early stages. Just after he had gotten signed to his deal. So this is nothing new. But the part that baffles me the most about this is not so much that this was a Jewish guy, Mark Goldberg, that was fleecing the community to get all of his money. As the report said, he had $400,000 in his bank account that was seized. But he had these black guys outside running offense for him, they're protecting him outside and pulling in all of these people to help him fleece the community.
Yeah. All of these black people were out there fleecing their own people.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And they knew they were doing something illegal.
I've seen that before, too.
Isn't that odd, though?
I'm talking about black guys being out there fleecing their own people. I saw that before, too.
Well, we see it everywhere.
Well, we see it every day. I mean,
look at the president.
Well, it's a common practice. Huh, who do you think initially sold slaves?
There you go. But, this is... What I find astonishing about this was... telling these people how they were going to get, using the whole Obama money scandal.
Whoa, wait. Can we rewind for a second?
Yeah.
So, did you just say, look at who initially started selling slaves?
Yeah, you don't think that the white man actually went over to Africa and just started picking them up, did you? No, it didn't work like that.
So, wait a minute.
You didn't know this story?
The original slave traders are Africans. Well, who did you think they were getting them from? They were prisoners of certain tribes, and tribes sold the prisoners, Africans, to the
prisoners
white.
Of war when the tribes were warring.
Watch Amistad.
Another great already, Connecticut tale.
Who's a blonde-haired, blue-eyed devil now, you
yeah,
little
well,
bastard?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. They never tell you that portion of the history. The bottom line is that when white men went, the Dutch, when Europeans in general went to Africa, the idea was to trade for slaves.
Yeah.
They went there, and they went to African kings and monarchs. And they sold. What did they use? When you paid a penance, Amistad has a great line. In Amistad, pardon me, the character played by Jimon Hunsu, you know, from, you know, give me the black diamond. Give us free. Yeah, that guy. Give us free. When he says that in the courtroom, he says, like, what would make somebody an indentured servant in Africa? He says, wars, debts. You were a slave in Africa already. You were slaves to other kings and monarchs.
So aren't you glad that the white people came and got you and eventually...
Yeah, exactly.
Miss Baby Fat himself.
I'm kidding.
But it's the same...
No, I have
no,
to...
Listen, no. Listen. I took a lot of flack.
Say again, JC?
Mary, I took a lot of flack for a comment that I once made at work. Where we were sitting there, we were talking about slavery and so on and so forth. You know, we're not supposed to be talking anything about anything that sensitive at work. Can't talk politics, can't talk stuff like that. Well, I worked the second shift. We got out at 11. Bosses leave at 5. So we're talking about slavery and those things. And I took a lot of flack from, and I said this on my radio show in Hartford. That's how it came up. I had stated, I said, you know what, I'd much rather be chewing a fat with you idiots here and having a conversation with you than sitting in a bush in Africa with flies on my lips and eyelids waiting for a handout from Sally Struthers. I said, I'm glad that my forefathers took those carnival cruises.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
That's just vicious.
No, look, I would rather be here than there.
Well, everyone knows that. That's, you know, a lot of people that, you know, it's so funny because I remember that whole diatribe that I used to get back in the days from a lot of black people, especially growing up in Hollis, Queens, you know, talking about how, you know, we came from kings and queens. Not everybody was a king.
Yeah, only sold.
You know, that's such bull. You know, Star had a great line that I remember when I first...
And that's when everybody started, like, naming their kids
right.
Nefertiti.
Right. I'll never forget, Star, when I first started working with Star and Buck Wild at Hot 97, I'll never forget the day that he said it. It made me laugh uncontrollably because I thought he had so much guts to say it when he said that he came from a long list of African slave traders. And I thought that was brilliantly put. People didn't know how to respond to that.
But
it's
the truth.
But it's the truth. It's like, if you came from kings and queens, then you had to accept the fact that because some kings and queens were slave traders. They were the ones who were trading slaves for things like food and gold and treasure. They were trading people for that.
They were trading their own people for wealth and for items.
Right.
And that is what I have said this entire time. That's what all of this boils down to. The wealthy and the not wealthy. I mean, it is just, or the greedy, the have.
No, not really. Not really so much for that, but I mean, it was a way to get rid of their enemies.
That's
to
eliminate
the enemies.
That's right, to eliminate the
enemy. Well, who were the enemies? The have-nots.
No,
when they went to war with each other.
Rival tribes.
Oh.
Yeah, rival tribes.
They're enemies. You know what? I want to take a break. I want to get into what you just said about greed. And I want to tell you why that word has been misused in this country today.
Really?
There's no such thing.
Of greed?
No such thing.
Wow.
No such thing. I think.
Wow.
Trust me, there's no
I beg to differ.
No such thing as greed. No
such
thing.
Is it just stupidity then?
No, it's not stupidity. No such thing as greed. There's crime, that's one, but there's no such thing as greed. Greed is a fallacy. There's no truth to that. There's no truth to it at all. And I will explain to you why there's no such thing as greed. And when I break it down to you, you'll understand where it is where I'm coming from. Let's take a break. When we get back, I'll explain to you why there's no such thing as greed. It's Reese on the Radio. Stick around. Stay right where you are. Don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
An Olympics hit by scandal and deficits, he rescued them. He turned around dozens of companies and became a business legend. A state losing jobs with huge deficits, Governor Mitt Romney turned it around, cutting spending instead of raising taxes. At every step, he's met extraordinary challenges. Mitt Romney, the energy and experience to turn around Washington.
I'm Mitt Romney, and I approve this message.
Hey guys, I'm Jordan Sparks.
I'm Chase Crawford.
Hey, what's up? It's Usher.
Hi, I'm Rachel Bilson.
I'm Hayden Christensen.
I'm Peyton Manning.
Hey, we're Fall Out Boy.
I'm Dan Archuleta.
I'm Corbin Bleu.
I'm Kristen Bell.
And we're the Jonas Brothers.
And I promise you, none of these people listen to my show. But here's some people who do.
Hey, Reese.
I
don't think you're a buffoon.
Thank you, dear. George, you're on with Reese.
Hi there, Reese.
Hello, George.
Please let me do the talking today.
George, you're going to be brief.
I respect what you said because you know something, you're being honest.
Hey, I'm glad that you're bringing up what's most important, and that is the issues and where people stand and what they have for experience.
It's Reese on the Radio, weekday here on blogtalkradio.com.
Exciting things are happening at Burger King.
Welcome to Burger King.
What's in those new chicken snack wraps?
What's in the new chicken wraps?
Mary?
Crispy chicken, fresh lettuce, three cheeses, fresh dressing, wrapped up in the tasty lava tortilla. Crispy chicken, wrapped up in
the new chicken snack wraps. Come and get it.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio. And let me tell you something. Nothing makes my job more perfect than interacting with you, the listeners of the Reese on the Radio show. Eric, you're on with Reese.
Hey, first of all, I want to say that you are very refreshing, my friend.
Thank you, Eric.
I do think there's too much emphasis on the race card.
Sure.
I'm sick of people who want to be treated exactly like everybody else as long as we recognize that they're different.
Yes, that's it. Chris, you're on with Reese.
Yes, hi, Reese. I just had to rebuff that guy that called you and said your arguments were weak.
Sure.
He's basing his vote on something you said, and he's talking about
my arguments weak,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, what a hypocrite. Well, I hope he's still listening. Buddy, you're a hypocrite. You shouldn't even be allowed to vote.
Thank you, Chris. I appreciate it. Steve, you're on with Reese.
Hey, Reese, I got to compliment you. You were wonderful handling that guy who was going to base his whole decision on something you said, which you handled it well. I think you just sealed the deal with the listeners, and you're doing a wonderful job. That's all I wanted to say.
Steve, thank you very, very much, and I appreciate that. It's Reese on the Radio right here, 8 to 10 p.m. weeknights on blogtalkradio.com.
Proven conservative leadership. Newt Gingrich. In uncertain times, we need a leader whose commitment to conservative values has been tested. Newt stood with Ronald Reagan. Newt stood up to Bill Clinton, and Newt was there for conservative values. But most importantly, Newt has always believed in the greatness of America, that America's best days are ahead. The choice. Newt Gingrich, the proven conservative leader. Winning our future is responsible for the content of this message.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the Radio, and you know you can get Reese on the Radio anytime you want by logging on to ReeseOnTheRadio.com. That's right. ReeseOnTheRadio.com gives you all the latest news, all the latest stories that I find interesting, and you can also click on to www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com and listen to archives of my new show, which is on BlogTalkRadio.com. That's right. It's www.ReeseOnTheRadio.com. You can get all the latest news, all the latest events, and anything else happening in Reese's world. It's Reese on the Radio, and I'm back right here on BlogTalkRadio.com.
He defends our freedom, and his record shows it. Ron Paul. Answering our country's call, Ron Paul became a flight surgeon in the Air Force. As a doctor, Ron Paul delivered over 4,000 babies and is a leading defender of life in Congress. Ron Paul never voted to raise taxes, never voted for an unbalanced budget, never voted to restrict gun rights or raise congressional pay. Protecting our God-given freedom. Ron Paul for president.
I'm Ron Paul, and I approve this message.
If you're not listening to Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, you've got no idea what you're missing. From the Daily Caller, Mr. Matthew Boyle. Matthew, thank you very much for joining us. I'm glad you took some time out for us.
Great to be here, Reese.
Who do we have on the line?
All right. This is Sean Quali, National Spokesman for Black Panther Party.
Sean Quali, thank you very much for contacting us and being on the show. For all the news and the people making news, make sure you check out Reese on the Radio on blogtalkradio.com, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Warning, the sound you're about to hear can be devastating to your ear.
I love it, I love it, I love it, I love it.
You're listening to Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. And we're back at Reese on the Radio right here on blogtalkradio.com. Welcome to the app. Now, Mary, before I get to a story that I wanted to get into, which was about Ann Coulter and talking about the racism of gun control, you said the word greedy, and I've heard you say this before. So I want you to listen to a scenario, and you can respond to it, but I've always used this scenario. Unfortunately, you are not one of these people, so I don't want you to get the impression that I'm saying you are this type of individual. But there are a lot of ill-educated people in the world who believe in the word greed instead of the word crime. Now, there are people out there who take more than they're supposed to take, and they do it, what we call ill-gotten gains. Those people are not greedy. Those people are criminals. Okay?
But they're criminals based off of greed.
Wrong. They are criminals. If you take something that doesn't belong to you, you are a criminal. You are a thief. Not greedy. You are a thief. Greed is something completely different. And the reason why it's been used today on everything about people who have too much or who want more, who can't stop having, those people are greedy. And they use that word. There's no truth to that. Let me tell you why I say this. Let's say that you and I are in a group of 20 people, and there are 50 donuts on a table at a buffet.
Surprised that you would use donuts.
This is the scenario I would use when I talk to people in jail. I said there are 50 donuts, and there are 20 of us here. 50 donuts here. And so I walk in, it's 2 hours into this conference or whatever it was. And when I walk in, out of those 50 donuts, only 10 have been taken. So there's 40 donuts by the time I get there. So I see everybody sitting around, and the people have been there for a while, and a couple of people are eating a donut. You know, those 10 people are eating a donut. And I walk over, and I just grab a big plate, and I start grabbing maybe 7 donuts. Let's grab 7 of them. And I look at all the donuts that I like. And I said, there's a cruller over here, there's a glaze, there's Boston cream. I grab 7. Hey, what the hell? I grab 10 donuts. And I walk over and I sit at my table and I start eating those donuts. The person walks up to me and he says, Joe, why do you take 10 donuts? What's the problem? He's like, you know, there are other people here. And? He's like, why you got to have 10 donuts? Well, the donuts don't say that there's a limit. There's just a pile of donuts there, and I took 10. I can eat 10 donuts. So I took 10. So the guy looks at me and he says, yeah, man, but you're being greedy. Am I? I like donuts, and I'm going to eat 10. But what about everybody else, he'll say. They've been sitting here for hours. The donuts have been sitting there for hours, and they didn't grab them. I grabbed 10 donuts. What makes me greedy? If they wanted a donut, shouldn't they have gone up and grabbed them? Or should I have waited for everybody to have decided whether or not they wanted a donut and then take them after no one wanted them? Because of what? Political correctness? Because it would have shown manners? I can eat 10 donuts. And if I sit there and I eat all 10 donuts, what have you got to say about it? I can eat, afford, 10 donuts in my belly. And if I get sick and get diabetes, so what? I have the right to take those 10 donuts. There's no sign that says, please take one. The donuts are there for the having. But because we've been conditioned as children that not to take more than your share, like there's an unwritten rule about what should be your share.
Well, your share. Okay, I can't connect this to eating donuts, but your share, the way we were talking, monetarily wise and things of that nature, your share is what you work for.
Ah, but they're free donuts. They're there for the taking.
But I'm not, you can't use the donuts in this scenario.
Okay, so fine. So let's say that I decide that I want to work 20 hours a day.
Okay.
Because I just want all that overtime that I can get. And then somebody else in the office turns around and they go, hey, you know, you've been working a lot of overtime. The rest of us can't get any because you are working all that overtime. What am I supposed to say to them? So you want me to stop working overtime so that you can have some of it? So I'm supposed to make sure that you get, right? If I can do the work, I can do the work, right?
If my boss is letting me work overtime,
I'm going to make as much money as I possibly can.
And they're not letting you work overtime. That's not my problem.
It applies
to everything.
There is no such thing as greed. It's something that we're conditioned to believe. Having more than your fair share.
What is your
definition of greed?
When you have what you've worked for and then you start taking more.
Taking more than what?
Taking more than what belongs to you.
Then that's stealing. That's different.
It is stealing,
but
the premises of stealing is being greedy.
No. The premise of stealing is stealing.
For some people, it is.
No, that's all it is. It's all it is. But if you have more money than anybody else, you're not greedy. You just, look, I want to have more, so I'm going to do what I can to have more.
Especially if they're there for the taking.
Especially if it's there for the taking. If the opportunity to get more money is there, you get more money. That's not greed.
It's theft and greed.
If you take it from somebody and you didn't earn it, that's stealing. That's
theft.
it's theft. Simple theft. But people hear this word about greed. You know, they keep calling about greedy Wall Street. Oh, they keep making all this profit. Greedy oil companies. Greedy oil companies. They want more profit. Well, what's so wrong with having more profit?
There's nothing wrong with having more profit. It's the stealing.
Right. Then attack people who steal, not people who want more. You see my point? People who want more are not greedy. Because they have more money than they can ever possibly spend doesn't mean that they're greedy. There are people out there who sit up here and go, oh, he got more money than he can ever spend. He should give some of that away. Why? Because you ain't going to spend all of that. So? What if I want to spend all of that? What if I wake up one day and I lost my wife and I'm so bent out of shape that I decide, I can't take it anymore, this money's on me. And I go to the store and I buy me the most expensive $500,000 car, and then I buy me a $4 million yacht. And I just spend it and go, he ain't ever going to use that yacht. There are always those guys. He ain't ever going to use that yacht. What you got to buy a $500,000 car for? What you got to buy that for? You just greedy.
And those are the people out there who are resentful of people who have versus they have not. Because if you had all the money in the world, you wouldn't want to give it away.
I don't look, well, if I had money, I wouldn't do things like that.
If you had all
if
the money
I had
that you
all
needed,
the money that I need, I would help other people because
help
that's what
out.
I want to do. Like,
what if you don't have anybody? What if it's just you? Single, no family, no nothing.
Okay. Then no, I would help I would do things in the community.
What would you do for the community? By the way, I apologize.
If I had more money than Carter's got living clothes, I mean, like, if I was filthy, if I had filthy money, just crazy.
I'm going to call you a liar right off the bat. I know you wouldn't do it. Whatever you're about to say, you
yes,
wouldn't
do
I it. Would. Go on. Go ahead. Tell me what you do.
I don't need a $4 million home.
So?
I can live.
I would request in my will.
In a modestly nice home, in a modest home, especially if I'm by myself, you know what I'm saying? I live in a decent place because, you know, you have to, like, have fundraisers and stuff like that and entertain people because you're helping people, whatever.
Okay, so you have a...
So you kind of, like, get a charity going or whatever.
And you just give your money. Just keep giving it.
Yeah.
To whom?
To people that needed it.
Who are the people who need your money?
People that don't have it.
Like,
no,
really?
I mean, like, help keep families, like, built, you know, you can house a lot of people for $4 million.
Okay.
You can house a lot of families that live
in
impoverished
Will they live
areas.
In your house?
No. I would, like, build them their own home.
So you build them their home. So who would pay for the bills of that home? The electricity, the water, all
no,
that?
No. I would, like, it would be like that thing that Chad Pennington does.
What does he do?
You know, I mean, not Chad Pennington. That was the quarterback for the Jets. My bad. Boo boo. Sorry. You know, famous last name.
Yeah, yeah.
No, Ty Pennington. Like, he gets these builders involved, and he goes and he finds these families, and they redo communities and houses.
Makeover?
Yeah, that's
so
it.
So you do the extreme makeover. You build them a house, and then what? You pay their mortgage for them, and they own the house? And?
Well, yeah, because you get people to donate. Yeah.
You feel better about yourself?
Have you seen how many of those houses have gone into foreclosure?
By the way, have you?
No, but don't tell me that. That's
oh,
really
yes,
sad.
They have. Yes, they have.
Oh, you cried for nothing.
That's right.
Really?
Yep. the black family.
Mary, leave it in your will that you don't want a mattress in your casket. You want to be laying on top of your money. Take it
That's
with you.
No.
It's yours. You earned it.
No.
Nobody.
No.
Anybody help you get it?
No, but it's not the point. I don't look at life like that.
Well, you know what? Why don't you
I really
do
don't. Honestly, I don't look at no. Stop it, because you two are not going to sit here and chastise me.
We're not chastising
having,
you.
We're chastising you.
For having a good heart.
No.
So
that
is just the
stop,
type of person
stop.
That I am. If
you,
I ended up, I
you rhino.
You cannot sit up here and tell me because you give your money away, you have a good heart. That doesn't qualify you for having a good heart.
But as a person, I'm compelled to do things like that.
No. See, person has a good heart, never ever has to disclose. That's who they are. No. What you're saying is that you believe that if you had all that money, that in order for you to be justified to have it, you have to give.
No. I don't have to give. If I have all this money, I don't have to give my money away to be have justification for having that money.
I'm glad you feel that way.
That's who I am, Reese. That is just what I would do. Those are things that I've always told myself, that if I came across any kind of massive amount of money, if I, like, hit the lottery or something, you know, I would help people because that's what I would want to do. It makes me feel
good. Okay, if you hit a lottery, I could see giving money some of it away at that point. Yeah, that's paying it back. But if it's money that you've earned, no.
I mean, I don't make a whole boatload of money right now, and I still help people when
I wouldn't give
see the need to do it. Because you're...
What? Because I'm what? Callous?
No. Because you're who you are. That's who you are, and that's okay. You can, and it's... I'm not telling anybody that they have to go out and do what I would do. That's on them. I don't hold... You know, I don't judge you for that. That's who you are.
I don't believe that
I'm not forcing who I am on anybody else.
I don't believe that anybody deserves anything that I've earned. In fact, even if I won it, if I won the money.
I'm not saying anybody deserves it. That is not, no one is, I'm not saying that you deserve it. Like, you did something, you earned this. No, you didn't. I earned this. And I have so freaking much of it. What am I going to do with it? I have everything that I need. Stop it. Oh, my God. That's so rude.
I just don't believe
her. Okay, fine.
I think.
I believe her. I believe her. I just don't understand her.
I think she's been conditioned to be to believe in this.
No, I haven't. I promise you. No one has conditioned me. This isn't a social conditioning. This isn't a parent conditioning. This isn't any of that. That is just how I am. That is who Mary Mary Why You Bugging is.
Yeah.
We're not going to fall for a banana in the tailpipe. You're not going to fall for the banana in the tailpipe? You've been hanging out with this dude too long.
Exactly.
I don't believe you.
I believe her. I just don't understand her.
I don't either. I don't understand it one bit. It's sad, but, you know, I don't know. I just, people are under the impression.
Wait. I'm not judging you. You said you weren't like that. Never once did
No. When did I say I didn't judge you?
No.
No one's judging.
Oh, but Reese is. I said, that's fine. I'm not pushing my beliefs on you, and that's okay. I don't judge you. And now you tell me, oh, that's sad.
What I'm saying here is that when people start getting this idea of the word greed, I think that they're missing the truth. There is no such thing as greed because you want more or have more than someone else and not willing to give it to others. That's not greed. That means it's yours. You're allowed to keep what it is that belongs to you.
You definitely are allowed to keep what belongs to you.
Okay, but
the minute you claim it, it's yours, especially if it's there for the taking
and
free.
And that's fine. What you work for and what you have is yours. I'm not asking anybody to change.
But we corrupt our children in the beginning when we do that, when we tell our kids, now remember, you have to share. No, I don't. I mean, and kids don't know.
Okay, wait a minute. Now you're going in a totally different direction. There are ways that you have to teach your children to act to behave in society in order to get
that's
along
bogus. See,
socially.
That's what I'm
no,
talking
it's
about.
Not.
That's bogus. So here's what
no,
I'm
it's
gonna
not.
Say.
You
hold
can't
on,
just
hold on.
Be go around being rude
to
people
let me
and
to you. Let me
doing
to
things that
so
are that are
my
not
birthday.
Social.
No, let
norm.
Me tell you why this is a contradiction. This is why I get upset. Okay, so I'm 7 years old. Okay, it's my birthday. And everybody shows up with all the toys I want. I got the Transformers, I got the G.I. Joe, I got the My Bunny toy, I got an Erector set, I got Hot Wheels. Hot Wheels! And then I get all that and I open up all the gifts on my birthday. And then as I'm playing with the toys, all of a sudden my mother walks up to me and she goes, now remember, Eddie, you got to share. If I had any sense, I look directly at my mom and I go, the gift said for me, not for everybody. If it was important that I share, why didn't you just buy everybody a Hot Wheel, buy everybody an Erector set, buy everybody a My Buddy, buy everybody a Transformer, buy everybody a G.I. Joe?
A Teddy Ruxpin.
Yeah, a Teddy Ruxpin. Why do I have to share? This is for me. It's my gift. I'm opening up. We don't get to a baby shower and the woman opens up the bassinet and she goes, "Oh!" And then somebody goes, "Don't remember now. You gotta share."
Because those aren't really gifts.
It's gifts. It's gifts. So we're not gonna be sitting now. Somebody gonna split hairs about gifts?
Come on
it's
now. You can't compare a 7 year old's freaking birthday
but
party.
But why is it that with a 7 year old we tell everybody to share? But adults, we don't tell them to do share when they have the same birthday party. Hey, look, Bob, a gut be gone.
Anybody want to try?
No, they never say that. Because the gift is yours. But when we're kids, we tell them to share. But when we're adults, no one even utters the word. His wife doesn't tell him when she buys him a new stereo or buys him a new car and says, hey, I got your new car for your birthday. Thanks, sweetheart.
don't forget, you got to share it with your buddies. She never says that.
Well,
it's
of
a mixed
course
message.
Not.
It's
no,
bull.
It's not.
No, because when you're a kid.
Of course not.
When you're
because
a
you're
kid.
Not expected to have to share a car with your buddies.
What? Why should I be expected to share my Hot Wheel?
Because it's a way for you to learn how to survive in society. Their social
survive?
Norms.
Tell me once you had to share in your regular life as an adult.
I have to share information all day long.
No.
Well, it may
sharing
not be
sharing information
tangible.
In a company is different. I'm talking about your personal life. Tell me when you had to share.
When I had to share as an adult?
As an adult, when you had to share.
When I have to run people around.
You know, that's not
when
sharing,
I have
that's
to...
giving. That's different. Share. Something you have. Tell me in your regular life when you've ever had to share.
I've never had to. I just opted.
Aha, but you never had to. So tell me where the conditioning that you were learned as a child has worked in your regular life. Where you were made to share in your regular life. You don't share bills. You go to
that's
the,
usually a lesson you learn on your own.
That's what I'm saying. You, everything else that goes on in your life, you have to be responsible for it. So you, if, think about it. If you're teaching your child how to be independent and responsible, tell me how sharing plays any part in that.
It's a social freaking...
Aha! Uh-huh. It's social hypocrisy.
It's not hypocrisy.
You can't win this one with me, because I know what I'm talking about. It's bogus. What they teach kids never applies in their regular life. Never, ever does. This is one of those roles where kids always ask, when they learn algebra, am I going to apply this in the real world?
No.
Sharing, you never apply in a real world, because you can't find one instance in the real life of yourself, your real life, where you were forced, in your adulthood, where you're made to share. Not once. You either choose to share, but you tell me where sharing is a product of your life.
Well, because it was part of my upbringing.
But how, again, how do you apply it? Can you apply what your mom and your dad taught you about sharing to today?
Yes.
Tell me where.
Oh, when I opt to share. No, I don't have to.
Oh,
no.
It taught you to be a caring person, to be willing to share.
Yes.
But tell me where you apply sharing in your regular day-to-day events, where you just share.
Like if I go to get lunch, I ask the girls, do you want lunch? I'm going to
giving.
Wherever.
That's different.
No, it's...
It's doing somebody a favor.
It's
charity. It's different.
Oh, my God.
It's not sharing. Tell me where you share. When you buy your lunch, when you go to work, when you buy your lunch, do you share your lunch with someone?
Yeah, sometimes we do.
Did you share your lunch how?
Like if somebody gets onion rings or somebody gets french fries, you're like, oh, let me get an onion ring. I'll give you some french fries.
That's giving.
You share.
It's the definition of giving. That's not sharing.
Yes.
No. Sharing means you're the only one with, they are without, and you give of yourself. Tell me where you apply that. You don't. Bartering is what you're talking about. You don't.
I love it.
I hate you.
Whoa! I love it.
I love it.
Oh, I'm having so much fun.
Whatever.
I think it will. I'm sorry, I gotta play my theme.
Where you are, don't go anywhere. Reese on the Radio returns in a moment right here on blogtalkradio.com.
Trying a brand new menu item at McDonald's isn't risky. You know what's risky? Petting a stray pit bull or shaving your head just to see how it would look. That's risky. Naming your son Sue, super risky. Giving your friends your Facebook password, ultra risky. So trying a new menu item at McDonald's is about a zero on the old risker scale. Try a snack size of our new Chicken McBites for free with purchase of any extra value meal from January 30th through February 5th. New at McDonald's means no risk, delicious reward. Participation may vary.
I tried a lot of cars, Ford Pinto, the Pontiac Fiero, but the Volt was the first car that truly got me excited and looking into the prospect of buying American again. Yeah, I've heard they're catching on fire in some cases, but I found that the fire really helps me get to my destination faster for fear of my life. Also, people really move out of the way when giant hunks of metal are hurtling towards them. Probably the one thing that sold me on the car. I'm really proud of what GM has been able to accomplish by working with the Obama administration. They've proven that in America, you can make it in any business, as long as you have unlimited financial resources and the backing of the United States government. I don't know about you, but I think that's more than worth the couple hundred thousand dollars it costs taxpayers every time somebody buys one of these suckers. I'm sorry, do you smell something?
Hey, what's up, guys? It's Reese on the radio, and I know you've got an opinion, so give yours. The number is 347-308-8701. 347-308-8701, right here on Reese on the radio. It's Reese on the radio, and we're back. 4 minutes to the top of the hour. We'll end the show. I did want to get into this whole story about Ann Coulter's article, but we'll get into it tomorrow. I'm sure there'll be some news that does break. George Zimmerman got out midnight today. It was literally almost 24 hours ago. Finally got out. Had to wear a bulletproof vest when he walked out. Has it really, really gotten that bad? Really? Has it gotten that bad? That he had to walk out with it. I just find that odd. Anyway, so he's home. We'll see where the rest of this lies. People are saying the same thing that I said, that the lead investigator really, really, popped a hole right in the whole prosecutor's case. Doesn't know who started the fight. So that's going to hurt things. It's damn sure going to hurt their case. So we'll get into that. I also want to make sure, Nancy Pelosi, I got to get into tomorrow, and what it is that she said about people who don't pay taxes in this country and who don't earn any money, what she said. I got to get into that tomorrow as well. Lastly, before we leave, I know you didn't know this, JC, so I'm going to play this for you right now. Frederica Wilson, as you may know, she's heavily involved in the Trayvon Martin case.
Trayvon was hunted down like a rabid dog. He was shot in the street. He was racially profiled.
You remember her, and she also remember this when she was on the Senate floor.
Mr. Speaker, this is Trayvon Martin. Trayvon Martin's murderer is still at large. It's been 1 month, 30 days with no arrest.
So you remembered she said that, but this is what people didn't know before we sign off. This is something that I want you to hear.
Welcome back to Hannity. Now, as we explained in our last segment, Democrats not only refuse to practice what they preach, but they're also hypocrites when it comes to policy matters. And tonight, well, we have the perfect example. Now, during the height of the Trayvon Martin shooting, before all the facts were laid out, Democratic Florida Congresswoman Frederica Wilson was quick to jump in front of the TV cameras and fan the flames of hostility. For example, listen to this.
Now, I'm not going to be politically correct. I'm going to say it like I see it. Trayvon was hunted down like a rabid dog. He was shot in the street. He was racially profiled.
All right, now guess what? Back in 2005, when she was a Florida state senator, Wilson voted for the self-defense law that's called Stand Your Ground. And that is exactly what George Zimmerman claims that he was doing. Now, it appears that Congresswoman Wilson, well, she changes her position based upon the political climate. Joining me now.
That's the story. Frederica Wilson voted for the Stand Your Ground law, and now she's talking about how Trayvon Martin was shot down like a rabid dog. We'll see you tomorrow.